Hello, everybody, and welcome back to this episode of TriCatch powered by EI2, and welcome back to our little mini series on the topic of innovation. Now, I would encourage you to go back and listen to our first couple of episodes as well, but this one is going to be all about what's called the Rural Business Investment Program. And for that, we are bringing back Zach Macklin from our first discussion, and I, again, would encourage you to go back and hear his introduction of himself and the program. But for those who are here on this episode now, let's just do a real quick reintroduction of Zach.
Thanks, Sydney. Happy to be here and appreciate you bringing me on to talk a little bit more about what I do. So I'm Zach Macklin. I'm the Equity Portfolio Manager based here in Omaha. I've been with the association for almost 6 years, and I took over the administration of our RBIP efforts in early 2021. Short form, my background is in investment banking and private equity, where I focused both on primary fund commitments, which is what we do here in the Rural Business Investment Program, but then also direct investments in the ag and timber space.
Awesome. I've already learned a lot, as I do not come from this space, so I'm very excited to get going with this conversation. And I know we introduced the RBIP program a little bit in the initial episode, but let's go right back into it, introducing it and diving a little bit deeper.
Sure. So the Rural Business Investment Program is a government-sponsored effort to encourage private capital investment into rural America. This capital is designed to foster innovation, support small businesses, create jobs, and improve local rural economies. The program itself is administered by the USDA, and it was first introduced in the 2002 Farm Bill. How it works is this program allows professional third-party fund managers to create investment entities with the purpose of investing in rural small businesses. Once the entity is licensed by the USDA, they can then solicit farm credit institutions for capital as a licensed rural business investment company, or RBIC. An important thing to note is that having a license doesn't mean that the system is required to invest with that manager, but rather that it is legal for the farm credit system to underwrite and make the investment. The FCS regulations tightly govern what the system can and can't do from an equity investment standpoint, but the Rural Business Investment Program has been rubber stamped in advance, and so long as the licensing procedure is followed.
That's a cool way for us to branch out from our maybe normal business model, if you will, but still safely stay within that rural space as a government-sponsored entity. Awesome.
Yeah, that's right. And an interesting thing about the Rural Business Investment Program is that it's modeled after the Small Business Investment Program that is overseen by the Small Business Administration. And that's been around since the 1960s. So we have a bit of catching up to do from a rural aspect. The main difference between those two programs is that the Rural Business Investment Program requires its fund managers to deploy the capital into rural areas, which the USDA defines as cities with 50,000 people or less, and within the agribusiness sector. There's some nuances to these rules that allow us to invest in other areas such as healthcare or broadband infrastructure, but the rural requirement still holds. This program really gained traction in 2012 with the rewriting of certain statutes that broadened the definitions to include all different strategies of equity capital investment. Previously, it had only been limited to early stage investing, also called venture capital.
I know we talked about that idea a little bit earlier before getting on here and recording. That's a cool fact to point out, because then by the time we got involved, that allowed more baskets to put our eggs into and diversify our investment. So super awesome.
Yeah, that's right. And so in addition to venture capital, certain strategies such as growth capital or mezzanine capital or full leverage buyouts are also available under the program. The first investment that the system made in the program was in 2014 after a lengthy request for proposal process, which culminated in 8 associations making their first RBIC investments that totaled $150 million. And this was actually into a growth equity strategy. Since then, the system as a whole has invested in 21 licensed funds managed by 17 different managers with a total capital base of over $1.3 billion. And that $1.3 billion has helped translate into over 130 different portfolio companies within those 21 licensed funds.
And these different numbers and how they relate to each other, I know are going to be fundamental to understanding how this program really works. So let's try to draw a picture then, just kind of repeating what you just told to us. So the system has invested through 21 different funds or 21 different partnerships. These 17 different fund managers are kind of driving that and deciding where the money specifically goes. There's a difference in number there between 21 and 17, just because some fund managers are working with multiple active funds.
That's right.
And then the 130 is the total number of companies that span across those 21 funds, because a single fund can help pay into and invest in multiple companies.
That's correct.
Awesome. Now we know what the RBIP program is and a little bit of how it works. Why do we get ourselves involved in this program? Why do we participate?
Yeah, the main reason we participate in the program is that it creates a wealth of benefits, not only for the associations, but for rural economies in which each portfolio company is located. I'll just list a few off, but some of the main mission-related aspects of the program include job creation, catalyzing additional investment capital into rural America from non-farm credit system investors, obviously the financing of new innovative technologies and services, farm credit system collaboration, and impacting these rural communities. There are also association-specific benefits, such as the ability to earn equity-like returns, the potential for creating new lending opportunities from the relationships that we have with these fund managers, and also producing a diversified stream of earnings for our customer owners. You know, all of the performance of this portfolio directly impacts the collaboration association's bottom line.
These are some awesome high-level benefits, and cool that there are so many of them. Can you add some color to each with some tangible outcomes for us?
Sure. So in terms of job creation, the investments made by the Collaboration Association, so the funds that we've invested in, have helped create over 3,100 new jobs. And these are living wage jobs, and they support over 8,600 different employees. Terms of catalyzing non-FCS capital. So I had mentioned earlier that the system has invested $1.3 billion into these funds, but there's an additional $480 million invested into these funds that come from investors outside of the system, such as insurance companies, high net worth individuals, community banks. And then on top of that, some of our fund managers also have sidecar funds that can contribute an additional $440 million, all for the benefit of rural America. Third, financing new innovation. There's too many specific examples to name on this podcast. That could be its own separate podcast. But some of the best companies that we've invested in, they produce goods and services that directly impact our customers. And as we know, a customer with more efficient operations and broader end markets is ultimately a better credit. I would like to highlight, you know, some of the coolest tech that I've seen in our portfolio has come to aid the livestock industry. We have portfolio companies that help track animals' locations, quickly diagnose diseases, and keep them safe in their enclosures.
As someone who grew up on a farm, even though I'm not necessarily in the audience of needing some of this tech, or on the investment portfolio side of the business that you're on, that this is still so cool to hear that that tech exists.
Yeah, and it's neat too, because, you know, not only are we the ones doing this, it's a lot of different associations across the whole system. It's very collaborative. In total, 22 different farm credit associations have made an investment into one rural business investment company. 17 have committed to more than four. And we're bringing new associations into the fold every year. A lot of these smaller associations rely on us for our underwriting work and portfolio leadership.
Go team. So a lot of these smaller associations rely on our underwriting work, as you said. Do these companies or pools, funds, whatever you want to call them, go through underwriting process similar to our, for lack of a much better word, quote unquote, regular customers? Or how different does that look?
Yeah, that's correct. So underwriting an investment to commit to an equity fund is much different than underwriting the creditworthiness of a prospective customer. And I guess from initial contact through when we typically close on our investment, these funds, they can take from anywhere from 6 months to up to 2 years. So it's a long process.
Very cool. Well, that sounds like another possible topic for another day, just to get into all the strategy involved there.
That's right. And so the last main outcome that I had listed is impacting rural communities. And it's important to note that, you know, these 130 plus portfolio companies have generated over $2.8 billion in total revenue for the fiscal year 2023. This revenue flows back into their rural communities via wages, suppliers, et cetera. We've also made investments with managers who focus on rural healthcare and broadband connectivity. And these are two major challenges that rural Americans face each and every day. So one of the examples I like to highlight out of these different investments is one of our healthcare portfolio companies actually rents equipment for ophthalmology and gastroenterology procedures to rural hospitals. And then once the procedures are complete, they pack them up and they roll them down the road to the next hospital. So this helps residents get the care that they need locally, and it doesn't stretch the hospital's budget.
That's cool. That's some great innovation on things that are maybe normal or typical to larger hospitals.
Yeah, it helps. It helps rural residents be able to not travel as far to receive the care that they need. So those are some of the main outcomes just from a mission perspective, but then there are also benefits for our associations. And so the first one is financial returns. And so while our portfolio is still relatively young and in ramp-up mode, we'd expect the returns to be at least in line with traditional private equity investments. Historically, this asset class has produced net returns of 12% per annum or better. We also received a lot of inbound lending opportunities from our relationships with our fund managers. And since 2021, the collaboration associations have booked over $700 million in loans generated by these relationships.
And it's cool, I'll point out that you just said 2021, and that's a pretty big number. But as we talked about earlier, we had been investing for several years prior to this as well. So that's a number from just recent years.
That's right. Yeah. So we first started in 2014, but the bulk of our capital was committed and the majority of our relationships were formed after 2019. And then when I took over in 2021, we really started tracking a lot of these different metrics on a regular basis.
Awesome to have those tangible numbers of those outcomes.
That's right. And then the last point around associations benefits is the diversified earnings stream. So the returns from our fund investments are not highly correlated with our interest income. There may be some embedded correlation due to being in the ag sector, but overall, these strategies operate independently and separately from the lending business and have a different risk and return profile. I'd also be remiss if I didn't also mention the internal collaboration benefits. Our innovation team is doing a great job and has built strong relationships with several of our portfolio companies and have utilized either their products or expertise to help solve internal problems. It's pretty cool when we can interact with a portfolio company to see if there's some value to add to our business or our customers. The innovation managers do a great job of connecting the dots to proper business units and then bringing in additional resources like our product managers. So far, we've worked on projects within the fintech, insurance, appraisal, and ag direct spaces.
And I'll point out for those new to us, our AgDirect space is our equipment lending business unit. All right, so we have talked a lot about the Rural Business Investment Program, or the RBIP. Now let's go into the RBIC, or the Rural Business Investment Company.
Sure. And so as mentioned earlier, the Rural Business Investment Program helps license these partnerships, which are then referred to as Rural Business Investment Companies. These RBICs are limited liability partnerships that include a general partner, which is the third-party fund manager, and limited partners, which are the investors. So us, the Farm Credit System, high net worth individuals, insurance companies, community banks, and these investors commit to providing money over a fund's lifetime to execute on their investment strategy. So each of these RBICs has a predefined strategy based on the manager's skills and their views of the private investment landscape. So some will search for investments in specific subsectors like ag inputs, while others prefer food processing companies, while others look at the life cycle of a business, such as early stage ag tech, or even the geography. You know, are they located primarily in the upper Midwest or in the Southeast? And we'd mentioned it earlier around blind pool, but that what's interesting here is there are no initial investments that have been made by the time that we make a commitment to these partnerships. So hence the blind pool. We don't know what's actually going to be in the portfolio, but this partnership structure pools all of our capital together to be invested on our behalf by these fund managers according to the strategy that was set out. And this strategy is defined by long legal documents of what they can and can't do. But otherwise, these managers are free to find investments that match their strategy. And then as they find these new investments, they then call for portions of our committed capital.
Awesome. And I'm going to round that out quick, or draw the loop back to the numbers that we were talking about earlier with the 21 and the 17 and 130. So like as you explained, the Farm Credit System working with 17 managers in 21 of those blind pools. And like you said, we don't know what companies are going to get involved. So we don't know what that total is going to end up being. And that's where we get to the 130.
That's right. And typically a fund, and just based on the size of the dollars that a fund can raise, typically averages out to anywhere between 8 to 14 individual investments within that fund. Now, if it's a venture capital fund and they make smaller investments, there could be many, many more. Whereas then the later stage companies, the buyout investments, are fewer.
And that's all part of your strategy, where your fund manager has a predefined strategy, as you said, and then we have some elements of strategy, and you put that together into their legal boundaries.
That's right. And then the manager will try to then deploy this capital over a five-year time period. It's called the investment period. And then once most of the capital has been invested, the manager then switches over to value creation and harvest mode. And our managers have specific skills and expansive networks that allow them to improve a portfolio company's operations, grow the business, and then eventually exit via a sale or an IPO. And that usually takes place over the next 5 to 6 years. So as you can tell, these investments are very, very long term, typically between 10 to 12 years from start to finish.
So both us and the companies involved, we're all playing the long game. So in that, what is our strategy?
Yeah, and so that's the fun part of all of this, and what I do on a daily basis, and kind of where the sausage is really made. So the collaboration association's allocation is defined by the board, which is then delegated authority to the appropriate internal committees to approve our commitments and then also monitor the portfolio. So my main role is to define this strategy and then seek out new investments, underwrite them, and monitor them to completion. Our portfolio strategy consists of kind of four main tenets. The first is a solid underwriting foundation. The second is proper portfolio diversification. The third is active portfolio management. And finally, four is risk management.
And I know on each of these tenets, we have, you know, kind of poked at little elements and referenced that already in this discussion. But can you talk a little bit deeper on all of those?
Sure. So our underwriting foundation helps us best vet out the best potential new investments. We look to source, underwrite, and partner with best-in-class fund managers that A, have differentiated investment theses, B, high levels of institutionalization, 3, the management team has experience working together, 4, they have an established track record of success within their proposed strategy for the RBIC fund, and 5, they have to have an unwavering commitment to the RBIP's mission. You know, for the most part, each of our new investments need to touch on these key points. And we've found that managers who can satisfy these requirements completely usually produce the best returns.
And now, how about in terms of diversification outside of finding which partners that you want to underwrite and ultimately partner with?
Sure. So when we craft a portfolio, diversification and risk management kind of go hand in hand. And we tend to follow the Yale endowment method of private equity investing. So we seek to diversify the portfolio across manager, vintage year, and company stage. And there's secondary diversifications via geography, industry, and security type. You know, just due to the nature of the program and the size of businesses that are typically targeted, we tend to skew earlier stage and obviously focus on ag-related industries. Investment pacing and sizing is very important, and it needs to be consistent. And so we typically tend to put out $30 to $40 million worth of commitments per year across 2 to 4 funds. Our average check size that we write is roughly around $15 million per investment. And this consistency helps ensure that each commitment contributes in a meaningful way and that our allocation is deployed over a 10-year time frame. And then hopefully this leads to a self-sustaining and fully diversified portfolio.
And I know I asked you about this earlier, but you said that 2 to 3 funds that we're adding to our list of partnerships per year is above replacement rate. Can you talk a little bit about what that movement over time looks like?
Sure. So our allocation is roughly $400 million across the 3 associations. And so by committing $30 to $40 million per year, we can effectively deploy that money over a 10-year time frame. And this is synonymous with how long a fund actually lasts. And so as funds end their lives and become liquidated and realized, and they roll off of the portfolio, we're trying to replace those with new ones. And then hopefully after that 10 years, that turns this portfolio into a self-sustaining entity wherein money that we receive back from existing investments helps fund the money that's needed by our new investments.
Very cool. I know it's not passive because you've got a lot of strategy going into this, but it kind of lends to the passive income idea in a sense of just being that self-sustaining idea, like you said. So that's really cool.
Yeah, that's the ultimate goal. This strategy, you know, it takes a lot of time and dedication, but it's been great to see the portfolio grow and all of the mission aspects being fulfilled. You know, we could talk for hours around individual underwriting points or investment theses or specific portfolio companies, but it's probably best to save that for another day. So if there's anyone at the collaboration associations that have any questions about the portfolio, would like to learn more, or how they could potentially interact with portfolio companies, they're encouraged to reach out to me.
Absolutely. This has been great already. I've learned a lot today. So thank you, Zach, for being here with us today. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in. Again, I will encourage you to go back and listen to our first couple episodes in the series and then stay tuned on future episodes about how we're going to activate on ideas and more on trends in the agricultural, financial, and technology spaces. That'll be it. Have a good one.